This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Studio to talk local history every Friday. We were talking earlier about the fact that truck is now stuck over at the UVA corner as we speak underneath that railroad trestle. Folks may not know crossing there, that where the railroad goes through there, that was originally a graded crossing. The road actually went over the railroad
over track. Top the tracks.
Yeah.
Right.
And they dug about in the turn of the 20th century. They got some mules and some drag lines out there, and they made a tunnel. So it would be easier for the increasing pedestrian and auto traffic
they
to get through.
They should have dug deeper.
Yeah.
They needed to.
They actually, I think they only dug it deep enough to get the trolley car through.
Ah, makes sense.
The streetcar line.
Makes sense.
And they didn't think that there would be trucks that big.
Little did they know.
How about that?
That's right.
So what are we talking about today?
We talked a little bit about it last Friday. I think we mentioned it briefly, but I thought it'd be interesting to talk about the brief period in time when Charlottesville, little tiny Charlottesville, Virginia, was actually the capital of the state of Virginia.
Very, very briefly, wasn't it?
Very briefly, yeah. It was only about a week. It was from late May. We're talking about the spring of 1781, late May. Until just the 4th of June, 1781.
And this, I think this story involves one Jack Jewett. And I was actually speaking. I was speaking to a UVA class yesterday, the auditorium full of a bunch of kids. And I said, has anybody in here ever heard of Jack Jewett? Not one of them raised their hand.
I'm
like, you're kidding me. There's no one in here?
Well, you know, I think the reason is because unlike Paul Revere, he didn't have a poet to write an epic poem of his amazing deeds. But yeah, it was the spring of 1781. Jefferson was just ending his second year as governor of the state of Virginia. The American Revolution was still going on, still had a couple of years to go. And unfortunately, what had happened, what made the big difference in 1781 that year was it was the first time that the British Army came in force to Virginia. Cornwallis had been operating in North and South Carolina and had won some victories there against Greene and some other American officers, but they'd been very, very costly. And no matter where he went, the American light forces, cavalrymen and the light troops were always harassing him. And they came up with the idea that if they took, you know, the largest state, the most populous state right in the center of the Eastern Seaboard, and that, of course, is the Old Dominion, Virginia, then they could operate better against either flank, against the northern states, the northern colonies, or the southern colonies.
And up until that time, most of the revolution had been fought in the north and in the south.
Virginia had been left untouched except for just a few raids. But I say raids, they didn't come and stay. They came and they raided a few towns and then left. And so all of a sudden, Cornwallis shows up, marches up from North Carolina with almost 7,000 troops. And Henry Clinton up in New York, a British commander up there in New York, sent him some reinforcements. So all of a sudden, there was a sizable army, and actually the biggest army that was operating in the field, because the British troops in New York were just holding the city and weren't really operating outside of the city of New York. This was the largest mobile British force in the field at the time. All of a sudden was in Virginia.
We're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian. At this time, were the colonies winning the war? Or was it a stalemate?
And that's the problem. It was a stalemate. Yeah. I don't think you could say either side was really winning. And it could, at any time, even past this time, it still could have gone either way.
Yeah. And Jefferson,
except for some of Cornwallis's choices, which ended the war, of course.
Jefferson was governor at the time.
Jefferson was governor. Unfortunately, he was not a military man like we talked about before. And so a lot of people say, and I think it's justified. We mentioned this last Friday, Coy. I think it's justified that Virginia could have been better prepared, that they could have done more so that when the British showed up, you know, we could have had a stronger force here, could have had something here. But basically, there was nothing here to stop them. And so the British ended up capturing Richmond, ended up taking Richmond. Now, Richmond was the capital. Jefferson had moved the capital from Williamsburg to Richmond during his governorship. So that's the origin of Richmond being the capital of Virginia. And the reason was to get it away from the coast. You know, with the British fleet, you know, the British Navy operating up and down the coast, they could control anything that was within, you know, a short distance from the shore. They could land at any time. And that meant Williamsburg. So he brought them inland, which was wise. But the British took Richmond, and on May 1st, just prior to their arrival, they were pretty much unopposed. The General Assembly, the state legislature, decided to quit the capital and to move to establish a quorum in Charlottesville, you know, 70 miles to the west. Now, they did that on May 1st. It wasn't until the 28th of May, so it took them a while to get up here. It wasn't until the 28th of May that a quorum was established in the original part of downtown. So we're talking about, you know, where the old courthouse was. They were meeting in the Swan Tavern and staying in some of the taverns right around the courthouse, you know, which is what legislators do. You know, they meet in the taverns, right, and, you know, and have a few beers while they're going over the deplorable situation in Virginia all of a sudden. But Cornwallis decided to try to take them and also try to take the largest arsenal in Virginia, which was at the Point of Fork, which is where Columbia is. And the Point of Fork is that little spit of land in between the Rivanna and the James, where the Rivanna comes into the James at present-day Columbia. It's just, Columbia is just a tiny little place. So he dispatched two raiding parties. The more famous one is under Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton. If you saw the Mel Gibson movie The Patriot, I don't know why they changed his name, but he was that character, Tavington. I don't know why they changed his name, maybe because people have a hard time pronouncing Tarleton. But anyway, that was supposedly the character Tarleton. So Tarleton was dispatched to Charlottesville to try to capture the legislature. And John Simcoe, who later on became governor of Canada, he was sent with a raiding force to try to capture the Point of Fork arsenal. And interesting, the commander at Point of Fork down there at Columbia, who had a small collection of recruits for the Continental Army, a few hundred, was a guy by the name of von Steuben, who had made his name at Valley Forge, you know, training the Continental Army during that horrible winter, training them to fight the British. So, and he was in command down there.
Did they save the arsenal down there?
No, they didn't save the arsenal. Simcoe took the arsenal, and von Steuben didn't have the forces to dispute his advance, and so he retreated over the James River and went to the south, saved what few munitions he could. But, you know, Tarleton rode to Charlottesville, and in between Charlottesville and Louisa County, in between Richmond, where he left, and Charlottesville, of course, in Louisa, is Cuckoo. And at Cuckoo Tavern, that's where Jack Jewett was. Now, Jack Jewett was familiar with the situation because his dad at the time was a supplier of beef to the Continental Army. But more importantly, he was the tavern owner of the Swan Tavern, where the legislators were staying. So he knew that the legislature was in Virginia. So when he sees, you know, a good number of British dragoons riding by to the west, he understands immediately what their objective was. They were coming here for the legislature.
We're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian, online at rickbritton.com.
Uh-huh.
Rickbritton.com.
Yep.
So Jack Jewett, who is this young man in Cuckoo Tavern in Louisa County, sees the British coming.
Right.
And he does a little... This is after or before Paul Revere?
This is after Paul Revere by many, many years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he jumps on the on his horse.
On his horse.
And rides out to Charlottesville to let the assembly know that the British are coming.
Overnight. Now, he had some tremendous advantages. One, he had a blooded horse. He had an excellent horse. Number two, he
knew... A blooded horse.
It was a well-bred horse. Number two, the advantage he had was knowledge of the area. And so he took some back trails, which meant he could take some shortcuts to get here to Charlottesville. But also, it was a moonlit night. And so he made it to Monticello. He rode up to Monticello and warned ex-Governor Jefferson. His term had just ended as governor. So technically, there was no governor of Virginia at the time by a couple of days. It's kind of interesting. And a lot of people think that Jefferson was the main target, but I've read over the orders. I think they knew that Jefferson was here, the British, but he's not listed in the orders from Cornwallis to Tarleton.
Oh, interesting.
Cornwallis did not say to Tarleton, and I want you to get that author of the Declaration of Independence, that seditious document, you know, that said so many nasty things about the king. Cornwallis did not say that to Tarleton. Now, I think it was understood that he would have been a great grab, you know, here in Charlottesville, and it's arguable what they would have done, maybe held him for ransom or something. It would have been awful for Mr. Jefferson. As it was pretty bad because he'd been a bad governor.
Yeah.
So Jefferson wasn't too happy about this time. And then Jewett went down the mountain again and went into Charlottesville and warned the legislatures. There's so many great stories. And one of my favorite, tell you really quick, is of a pair of cousins. This is a little known story, the Kinloch cousins. David Kinloch was a captain in the British Regular Army, and he was with Tarleton. Francis Kinloch was his first cousin and was a delegate to the South Carolina legislature. So he was an American patriot and serving in South Carolina, in the government in South Carolina, the state government.
So two cousins on opposite sides
two
of the revolution.
Two cousins on opposite sides. And you know, what would be the chance that they would meet? But just after passing Castle Hill, which was the home of Dr. Thomas Walker, and there's some great legends about that too, Tarleton sent some of his men on a side trip to Belvoir. And along with that group was riding David Kinloch, the captain in the British Army. And just before he left England, you know, some of the ladies in the family had warned him, you know, if you ever capture your cousin, don't kill him. Well, as they're riding up to Belmont, you know, as riding up to Belvoir, this house, the occupants start vacating. And as he looks, he sees this figure running out in the dark that looks very familiar. He took after him, and it was his cousin, Francis.
What was he doing up here from South Carolina?
Amazing, I don't know, but what an amazing what an amazing story.
So Jack Jewett warns the assembly, and most of them escape, right?
Most of them escape, except for Daniel Boone, and that's another great story. Maybe we'll have to leave that for another time. I don't think we have enough time for it.
We'll do it next time.
All right,
that's
great.
We'll do part two of of the British raid on Charlottesville in
1781.
Rick Britton, online at rickbritton.com, local author, historian, and cartographer, joins us every Friday to talk local history. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.